Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, January 7th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Brad Omen's top 10 movies of 2024. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Omen.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, before we kick things off, do you have any honorable mentions that you wanted to shout out at the top of the show?
Oh, that is a very good question. And yes, I do. Every now and then, like I feel like it might be easy to put together my my top 10, and then when I start digging into it, I'm like, oh man, this is tough, you know. And it's not because I thought it was like a weak year or anything like that for movies. It's just like I thought I kind of had like my favorites pretty well figured out, and then when I started going through the list of like everything I'd seen and everything that like I really loved, I was like, oh man, this is pretty difficult. But I think that I figured it out, which is good. I do want to give a shout out to the Bike Riders, which I think that like it didn't end up being like anyone's favorite or like a big movie for top 10 list or anything like that. But it's a movie that's kind of stuck with me. I've seen it a couple times this year, and I just really like I like how shaggy it is. I kind of like that it digs into a world that we don't really get to see much on the big screen. I think Jodie Comer is particularly fantastic in it, as are Austin Butler and Tom Hardy. And I just really liked that movie, you know, and it was, for me, it was cool too, just because it is set, you know, in the Midwest and like around the Chicago area. And so it kind of felt like, you know, a little bit of like, a hometown movie in a way. You know, there's a lot of places around me that look exactly like the places that they're driving through on their bikes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I really like that a lot. And
that's awesome. Yeah, Jeff, the conversation I had with Jeff Nichols on the podcast last year is one of my favorite interviews that I've done with the director in a long time. So I encourage people to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that yet, so I need to go check that out, actually. And I wanted to give a shout out to We Live in Time, which I feel like in other years it probably would have made the list, but for whatever reason, just came in under the wire. Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh are wonderful in this. It's a very emotional movie, very, very honest, very raw. And it's kind of a, you know, romantic drama that I really, really like and just hits my heart in a sweet spot.
Yes, 100%.
And I wanted to give a shout out to Snack Shack. I was really thinking, like, trying to figure out if it was going to make my list or not. And I couldn't fit it in there above some of the other ones towards the end of my list. But the more I've thought about Snack Shack, the more I've come to like it even more than I did initially, because I think that even though it's like capturing this kind of specific moment of like the movies that they used to make in the 80s, and like it's focusing on, you know, two teenagers, you know, in a summer who are being kind of, you know, rascally and figuring themselves out and whatnot. I do think it has a surprising ending that applies no matter what stage of life you're in. And I won't spoil it if you haven't seen Snack Shack. I believe it's still streaming on Amazon Prime. So if you haven't seen it, I suggest you seek it out. I suggested it on this podcast before. But there's something about the ending of this movie that happens that you're not expecting. And it hits in a surprisingly emotional way. And I think it's the kind of thing that like resonates no matter how old you are, because it's something that can happen like in your life at any given time. And it really just like changes your perspective on everything and can hit really hard. So if you haven't seen Snack Shack, go watch Snack Shack.
I love that. Yeah, that's a great shout out for an honorable mention. Any other ones that like just didn't make your list?
I wrestled with Dune Part 2 because I loved the second Dune movie. I loved it even more than the first movie. It's still half a movie, even though it was great, so it was tough to leave it out. I loved The Fall Guy. I loved Furiosa, but they just didn't make the cut. You know, it was tough. You know, there was just the 10 movies that I have. I really, really fell in love with, and so yeah, it was a tough decision, but I did love those movies as well.
Awesome. Okay, so before we jump into the list, I didn't have time to get into this yesterday with Ryan because we talked about some box office stuff before jumping into his top 10. But I asked Chris and I asked BJ, what is your approach to rewatching movies when you make a list like this? Do you make it a point to rewatch everything that's sort of in contention for your list, or is it just however the cookie crumbles, or like do you have a strategy when it comes to this kind of thing?
No, most of the movies that make my list, I haven't had a chance to rewatch yet. And the ones that like are in consideration, I don't even have the time to rewatch them before I make my top 10 list. You know, some of that's because I'm still catching up movies that came out late in the year that I'm trying to see for, you know, to consider for my list. And just because there's so many that like I do consider that it would just take me too long to do it to really figure out the top 10. So really, like, my methodology is that, like, I go back through the list of, because every year I keep a list of the movies that, like, the new movies that I've seen. And so I go back, and, like, as I'm going through the list, if, like, I look at a title and, like, it has resonated with me, or, like, I remember loving it, I'll put it in my list for consideration. And then I'll start going through that list and just, like, thinking about, like, the feelings that I still have about it, like, how I felt when I watched it. And kind of start digging through and placing them. And like, usually by that point I already have an idea of like four or five movies that I'm pretty damn sure are going to be on the list. And those movies usually end up being somewhere like in my top five or so. And then after that, I'm trying to figure out, okay, so which ones, you know, really like have stuck with me and like, you know, hit me in a special way or did something that, you know, I wasn't expecting, or, you know, and ended up, I haven't stopped thinking about, you know? So that's kind of how my process is.
Yeah. You and I are exactly the same in that regard. So, okay, let's jump into your list now. So tell me your top 10, or I'm sorry, your number 10 movie of 2024.
My number 10 movie is Will and Harper, a documentary that is out on Netflix. And this is a documentary that follows Will Ferrell and Harper Steele, a Saturday Night Live writer who transitioned to being a woman in her 60s. And the documentary follows them as they go on a road trip to kind of rekindle their friendship, and so that Will Ferrell can understand Harper's life experience and perspective and why she decided to transition at this stage in her life and what her experience was like beforehand. And really kind of almost being reintroduced to Harper, because while she's still the same person in many ways, there's also a lot of things that have changed about her. And it's, you know, it's something that, you know, Will Ferrell doesn't have a ton of experience with. So he has questions and she wants him to ask those questions. And what I really loved about this movie is that it feels like kind of the perfect gateway for anybody who doesn't understand like the trans experience or like what people go through when they decide to transition, whether it's, you know, becoming a woman or becoming a man, and just like what it's like to be in that body and in that mindset and trying to figure it out and the complicated feelings you have and like the struggles that come with even when you make the decision, because sure, you might feel more comfortable in your own body, but there's still so many more difficulties that come with it. And one of the things that really touched me was seeing how vulnerable Will Ferrell was when they have certain conversations, and when there's a particular mistake that's made that makes Harper Steele feel uncomfortable in a very delicate situation, a scenario that makes her feel awkward. And just watching Will be so genuine and authentic and caring, and because he, and knowing that he's this like everyman who appeals to everybody, I feel like there are so many people who could benefit from seeing this movie and seeing someone like Will Ferrell just understand and be accepting and be able to ask the questions that some people probably don't have anyone they can ask, or they're afraid to ask because they don't want to offend anybody, or because they simply don't understand. And so it's for all those reasons I came away loving this movie, on top of the fact that it really is just a charming road trip movie to watch them goof around with each other, because they're two stellar comedy writers who have a good time with each other and joke around while also having serious discussions about their life and their friendship and that kind of thing. So yeah, I loved it.
Will and Harper, this is a fantastic pick. It's so funny, and it moved me to tears several times. And the Kristen Wiig through line, which I won't spoil here, is it just pays off in such a lovely way. So yeah, excellent stuff there. All right, so what is your number nine?
My number nine is a movie called How to Have Sex. And this is a movie that technically was released in 2023, but that was overseas in the UK, and it wasn't released until 2024 here in the United States. This is a teen drama, I guess you could say. That's probably the easiest way to describe it. It's directed by Molly Manning Walker, and it follows three British teenage girls who are on like a spring break holiday where they're going out drinking and clubbing and hooking up with dudes and whatnot. And they're supposed to have this great summer, but one among them is a virgin, and she's navigating how to like reconcile that with like what this spring break is supposed to be. And like, she wants to lose her virginity, but it's also the kind of thing where it can be complicated, especially in such a like sex-driven environment, and especially spring break is one that is so like misogynistic and driven towards like sexualizing women and everything. And so Mia McKenna-Bruce is the girl who plays the one who's like struggling with this. And so the movie is brilliant in how it approached it, because of course she does lose her virginity, but the way she does it is not something that sits well with her. And as you're able to sit with her and feel like the discomfort and like the complications that come with like that feeling of doing something that you wanted to do, but doesn't go away, that like feels like it fulfills your hopes of what you think it should be and how it should feel, and the aftermath of that and the awkwardness and that kind of thing. And I also liked like the authentic depictions of like friendships that some people have, because a lot of movies like this that typically like the friendships are kind of like a little less authentic than what you expect Hollywoodized. But like in this one, there's one friend among the trio who she kind of sucks, and she's kind of mean to her friend in like a passive aggressive shitty way. And like, some people have, you know, friendships like that for whatever reason. And I appreciated that kind of more genuine, authentic portrayal of the kind of people that like teens have in their lives, because they're still figuring out their identity and stuff like that. But it's really just a fantastic, you know, coming of age movie in more of a raw, dramatic way than I typically, you know, end up liking at the end of the year like this. But it's fantastic, and it's definitely worth seeing. I think the only place it's streaming right now is Mubi. So if you want to see it, you should do like a week free trial of Mubi. And if you haven't seen The Substance, you can also watch The Substance there too.
Okay, man, that's great. So How to Have Sex is the name of the movie. This was not on my radar at all, and has not popped up on any of the other lists of anybody that we've done these top 10 lists for. So this is an excellent pick, a standout. So tell me your number eight movie, Brad.
My number eight movie is The Wild Robot. My gosh, I love this movie so much more than I was anticipating, because when I saw the first trailer, I was like, oh, wow, this looks beautiful. The animation is stunning. You know, it looked like the kind of thing that will pull your heartstrings. When I saw the second trailer, I was a little less enthused, because I wasn't expecting the animals to talk, and the way the robot was talking, it felt a little too childish to me. But I think it was just the way the trailer was framed and like the lines that they picked, because once I was in the movie and I was watching it, like, I didn't have any of those problems, and I fell in love with the movie so much more, because it's such a touching portrayal of being not just being a parent, but being an adoptive parent, which is, you know, seeing unconventional families like that is not something you see often in these kinds of movies. And on top of that, the movie is not only adorable and touching, but it is surprisingly funny in a very dark way because of how it depicts the reality of nature. There's one moment in this movie that, like, my jaw dropped because I couldn't believe they did the joke. Is there's a family of possums where the mother possum is voiced by Catherine O'Hara, and she's talking about how many possums she has, you know, as a as a mother of six, you know, and then all of a sudden you hear the kids off screen scream. And then she goes, "Well, five children," and it was such a shocking moment to me. But it's so funny, and there's other really great moments like that. But this was such a beautiful movie in more ways than one, and I absolutely adored it.
So, is this your favorite to win the Best Animated Feature Oscar?
Personally, yes, but that's only because I haven't seen Flow yet, and I've heard Flow is fantastic, and I would like to see it, but unfortunately, it's not streaming anywhere. It doesn't seem to be on VOD anywhere, and I missed it in theaters when it was playing nearby in Chicago. So,
okay, gotcha. All right, so what is your number seven movie?
My number seven movie is a movie that I talked about and praised a couple times on here before, and that is The Order, which is the kind of action heist thriller movie starring Jude Law and Nicholas Hoult. This has kind of flown under the radar, and it's been disappointing that it's flown under the radar, because I feel like this is the kind of movie that deserves so much attention, especially right now. It's directed by Justin Kurzel, and it follows Jude Law as this kind of, you know, grizzled FBI agent who's trying to track down this extremist who has come out of basically like a neo-Nazi community, who is taking an even more extreme approach to their beliefs and trying to push them on people, and they're planning terrorist attacks to help spread, you know, their word, as it were. And Nicholas Hoult plays the leader of this sect of domestic terrorists. And as I mentioned before on an episode of this podcast, he is so chillingly cold and then incredibly charming and convincing when he needs to be, that you really get a sense of like how these people convince those who have trouble thinking for themselves or finding a place, you know, in other communities, make them feel like they belong and like what they're doing makes sense. And that is one of the most terrifying things to think about. And Hoult does such an incredible job with the performance of balancing those two things, and just being calculated and cold, but, you know, really, really having like a personality that appeals to people who don't know what they want from life. And Jude Law is outstanding in this movie as well. But I hope more people see this movie whenever it becomes more widely available. It's available, I think, on VOD right now. I think it might be premium VOD, but whenever, you know, you get a chance, definitely seek out The Order, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, I want to underline your shout out to Jude Law, because we talked about this movie previously, but I think we didn't really highlight how great he is in the movie, too, because he's kind of like the audience surrogate character, the POV character, the sort of square jawed hero. And a lot of other actors would make this part pretty forgettable, but there's just something about him. He's so magnetic to watch, and it just feels like he can do pretty much anything as an actor these days, which is really exciting. So,
it made me feel like I couldn't believe he hadn't done something like this before, and I would love to see him do more stuff like this again, because he's really great in it.
Excellent. All right. So number seven was The Order. What is your number six movie of 2024?
My number six is Conclave, the bitchy Pope election movie. This is such a great movie in an election year, especially this year. It has an outstanding ensemble cast. It's such a compelling story, too. Like, just watching the election of a new Pope take place, and the voting process, and how sketchy and you know, it is behind the scenes, how much like betrayal there is. And it does so in a way where like it feels bitchy, but without feeling like it's like slight, you know, like there's still weight to it. And it also packs a surprising punch in the ending too. I didn't really have any expectations for this movie. Like, when I saw the trailer, it just felt like one of those like, oh, yep, there's an Oscar drama, you know, kind of movie. But I got so caught up in it, thanks to, you know, Ralph Fiennes and like this kind of like mystery that he's trying to solve while they're going through the election of the Pope. Stanley Tucci and John Lithgow are outstanding in it. You know, it's just it really just grabs you and doesn't let you go. And there's so much tension and suspense in a movie that you wouldn't expect to feel that kind of tension and suspense from. So yeah, Conclave is awesome.
Yeah, phenomenal score as well.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. All right, so let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into your top five movies of 2024.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply. At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All right, Brad, what was your number five movie?
My number five movie is Hundreds of Beavers.
Okay, nice.
This movie is so hilarious. And as I've said many times on the show before, comedies do not get the respect they deserve. And comedies like this are so rare because this does something that like you've never really seen any other like comedy like this do before. It has the slapstick silly laughs of like a Three Stooges short or a Looney Tunes cartoon, but it has this unique visual style that is inherently cheap because it needed to be, because it's such a low budget movie, but they use it to their advantage to basically make what amounts to a live action cartoon where you have this Applejack salesman, previously owned his own business, down on his luck because these beavers inadvertently destroyed his entire establishment, and he's like trying to survive in the wilderness and like kill animals to eat and find furs to trade for money. And you have these beavers who are like these pests who are constantly foiling his plans, and they're portrayed by people in just big mascot beaver suits. And there are other animals who are portrayed in the exact same manner. And it's so funny to watch it unfold. And there's like little, cheap kind of like animations to enhance it. And the comedy itself is just, it's so simple, but it's still so effective, and just goes to show you like how good slapstick comedy can be when it's handled by somebody who understands it and knows how to make it work with modern sensibilities. There's a particularly outstanding assembly line sequence towards the end of the movie that it's like the Attack of the Clones, like assembly line, sequence, but infinitely better and like in a live action cartoon form. It's so much fun. I love this movie so much. And at a time when comedies feel like they've been pushed by the wayside, like, this is exactly the kind of movie that like I love to see. And I'm glad other people have seen how good it is, too.
Yeah, it's such a fun mixture of innovation with that simplicity that you're talking about. Like, it feels like kind of deceptively simple in a way, but there's also, and obviously the technology behind it is really simple, but like there's something, yeah, that's almost like revolutionary about the approach to it, because it goes so much back to basics that it kind of like comes back around all the way or something. It has this weird feeling to it. So yeah, it's really, really fun movie. Hundreds of Beavers. I think that one's streaming on VOD right now. All right,
I think it's actually even available free through either Canopy or Hoopla if you have a library card. So yeah, make sure you check it out.
Awesome. All right. What is your number four movie, Brad?
My number four is a movie that I thought would be at the top of my list for a couple months, but it just didn't quite get there because a few things came along that knocked it out of place. But my number four movie is Saturday Night. This is Jason Reitman's depiction of the behind-the-scenes chaos from the first episode of Saturday Night Live, or as it was known back then, just Saturday Night, during the basically hour and a half leading up to the show's premiere, following the ensemble cast, Gabriel LaBelle as Lorne Michaels, as he tries to wrangle everybody and, you know, keep network executives off his back. My favorite thing about this movie is how it so perfectly captures the insanity of what it's like behind the scenes at Saturday Night Live. And obviously I've never been behind the scenes at Saturday Night Live. I would die if that happened. But from what everybody has described and from what I've seen in like documentaries and clips that are out there and everything, this just like really digs into what it's like to be in a show that is constantly moving and changing and figuring itself out up until the show airs. And that continues to this day because changes are being made to the show right up until the show begins. And even as the show is airing, there are changes that are made. And the way Jason Reitman weaves his camera through the set of Studio 8H in 30 Rockefeller Center is incredible. They built, you know, this 360 degree set where there's no edge of frame. And so they can go anywhere and they're not going to see any of the strings or anything like that bring the set together. And they recreated everything meticulously. The ensemble cast did such a great job of portraying big comedic personalities without feeling like they're doing caricatures, like the kind of caricatures that you would maybe see in an SNL sketch. They hit like some of the finer points of like the way certain people talked, and some of the characters they portrayed or things they did on the show, but without feeling like they're doing it over the top. The score like just really propels the energy of the movie the entire way through. I loved so much about this movie, and I've been so frustrated by people who were mixed on it or like flat out hated it. I don't get it. And like part of me thinks that it's like people who just don't like Saturday Night Live in general, or they're just, you know, don't understand what the movie's trying to do, because like I kept seeing people who were like upset like with the inaccuracy of certain things, and it's like, who cares? You know, like it's the movie's trying to capture like a vibe, and just like any movie that depicts something real that happens, not everything is accurate. There are composite moments, characters, and things like that, and it's just like, I don't know, grow up. So yeah, I love Saturday Night. It's still one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, you're its biggest defender that I've ever encountered, for sure. So
I will be for life.
All right, what is your number three movie, Brad?
My number three movie is Anora. This is Sean Baker's movie that follows Mickey Madison and as a stripper who also seems to moonlight as a prostitute, and she meets this young Russian kid who hires her for her services and then kind of takes her on this like whirlwind romance in the vein of Pretty Woman, but not nearly as romantic, much more, you know, sex and party fueled. And then his family finds out, and his family is big, rich Russian people who are not happy about it. And it kind of takes an Uncut Gems turn, where it turns into a crazy, stressful, chaotic night where they're trying to find him after he runs away and is confronted by essentially his like handlers that his parents have to keep an eye on him. And what I like about this movie, aside from just the general conceit and how it unfolds and how fantastic everyone's performance is the surprising way a genuine romance comes about from this movie. It's such a great spin on this kind of story. It gives it a complicated, you know, heart. It's not as cut and dry as you might think a story like this would be. And yeah, and on top of that, this movie is incredibly funny. You know, it's unfortunate that there aren't big studio comedies out there right now, but I like that there are still movies like this that have enough comedy in them that they still feel like comedies in a way. And this is definitely one of those movies because I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, super, super fun stuff. All right, number two.
My number two movie is The Brutalist. I was skeptical about the hype around this movie. Pretty early on when it was on the festival circuit, it was already garnering buzz, and I was very curious about it. And when you hear about a 3.5-hour movie generating that kind of buzz, there's a part of you that kind of rolls your eyes a little bit, like, yeah, okay, you know, let's see. But Brady Corbet has really delivered an incredibly powerful story that, in the vein of something like, you know, The Godfather or Once Upon a Time in America, but without the, you know, the crime angle, just this like big, you know, kind of American novel like epic that follows Adrian Brody on this heartbreaking journey, you know, as an immigrant who comes to America. And right from the get-go, the opening sequence of this movie is so captivating, and the way it's shot is so disorienting that, like, it's the first movie I think has really perfectly captured, I think, like, what the uncertainty and the chaos that comes with, like, being an immigrant at a time when so many people were trying to come to America to, like, make their dreams come true, and just being on the boats and seeing the Statue of Liberty and all that stuff. It really kind of put you in that moment and really made you, like, feel like you were in a claustrophobic space, and, like, so much uncertainty and, like, things to be scared of, and but also so much hope and excitement. And then from there, you know, just as the story unfolds, you know, there's so many turns and, like, both uplifting and unfortunate, and, you know, it really is just this incredible portrait of, you know, of a real man, you know, a real brutalist architect. And Agent Brody,
I don't think it's a real guy, though. That's the interesting thing. It's like it's a fictional person.
I thought it was a real person.
I think he's like loosely based on a figure, but it's kind of like a Lydia Tarr type of situation. And it's like the detail is so strong that it makes you feel like it's a real person. And Adrian Brody is just like unreal in this movie and truly disappears into that character. But I'm pretty sure Laszlo Toth is not a real guy.
Okay, yeah, he's apparently a geologist. So, yeah, interesting. I thought that it was a real person. So there you go. So that's how good the movie is that it convinced me that this person exists. Even the way Brady Corbet, like, talked about the movie, because he was at a Q&A when I saw this movie in Chicago afterwards, it made it feel, like, very, very real. That's interesting. But yeah, I mean, this movie is outstanding. If you get a chance to see it, you should go see it. There is a built-in intermission, so, like, it helps make the movie feel not as long. But if I'm being honest, at least for me, when I saw it, the movie didn't feel long. Like, it goes by pretty quickly just because you're so captivated and enthralled by the story. And man, it's one of the crazy things about this movie is they made it for, like, under $10 million. And the movie feels so much bigger than that. You know, like, there aren't, like, crazy big action sequences or anything like that where you think, oh, there's where the money is. It just looks incredible. And because it's a period piece, like, I'm overwhelmed by how they pulled off, like, the look of this movie and everything with that low of a budget. Because it feels like such a bigger movie.
Yeah, it's really staggering. Very well said. All right, man, I'm so curious now. I genuinely have no clue what your number one movie is going to be. So what is your number one of 2024?
My number one movie of 2024 is Nickel Boys. This movie really knocked me on my ass. Thankfully, this was one of those movies where every now and then there are certain awards contenders or indie movies where I haven't heard much about them except that they're good, and I go into them pretty much blind, where I don't really know what the story is or what to expect or anything like that. And thankfully, this was one of those movies. And just, like, letting it wash over me was such an incredible experience. And I went to go see it, like, at a very intimate, like, press screening for, like, awards consideration. So there was, like, only three other people there. And so just being there and watching this movie unfold, it follows two teenage boys who are basically sent to this, like, juvenile detention center and they're kind of made to believe that they have the opportunity to, like, improve and, like, essentially work off, like, their time to be able to get out. But it's the kind of place where, like, they don't really have any intention of letting these, you know, kids out or anything like that. And one of the things that is interesting about it is it's all shot in a first person perspective. And so it starts off following one of the boys in the movie from some of his younger years. You see like just little flashes of him growing up and stuff like that. So you get a sense of the character and who he is. And you follow him as he, you know, makes some missteps and accidentally ends up in trouble and ends up in this prison. And then he meets another boy who is already in this juvenile detention center. And then the perspective shifts and starts showing from his point of view. So you start to see, you know, the other character from that perspective, and it starts jumping back and forth. And it also jumps, has a non-chronological narrative structure too, where it jumps forward a little bit in time following one of the characters and then jumping back and forth. And it's such an incredibly moving portrait of stuff that really, this I do know did really, really happen. You know, it's based on an actual juvenile detention center that like existed, and they uncovered things about its nasty history and like what they did to like the kids there and how, what they were forced to do. And it's just a powerful, incredible story of like a true tragedy that happened, you know, in America. And yeah, I was overwhelmed by how much this movie like hit me, you know, because the performances in this movie too are like, you really just like feel for the two kids in this movie, because they are just, they're trying to get by, they strike up this, you know, beautiful friendship. They're played by Ethan Harris and Brandon Wilson, by the way, and they are just outstanding in this film. I feel like this movie is probably going to get a lot of awards attention. It's definitely getting a lot of acclaim from critics and whatnot. But yeah, again, I'll say just the way it's shot really just puts the story in like a different perspective, and it's such a simple decision that like it really makes you. It just shows how versatile filmmaking can be with like just a very simple decision that you would think, oh yeah, like that's, you know, sure, fine, whatever. But it's just how it enhances the story and how it puts you in like the perspective of these characters in a way that like you wouldn't expect would work so flawlessly. Yeah, Nickel Boys, see it as soon as you can. I think it will be released and released in theaters sometime this month in January. So
yeah, I think this one's still in theaters, and then The Brutalist, which I know a lot of people, trust me, like I live in Florida right now where there's not really a lot of like, when movies come to my area, it seems way later than everywhere else, especially New York and LA. And I think The Brutalist is only open in New York and LA right now, and then it's going to be rolling out a little bit wider next week, and then I think it's like end of January that it's going to be, you know, the widest possible release for it. And I'm not even sure if it's going to be in, you know, whatever, 2,000 theaters or something at that point. So if people are like looking for, you know, hey, why are these movies popping up on these guys' lists, and like, when can I see these things? Just try to be patient. I know that's super frustrating, but yeah, these movies are absolutely worth putting on your radar and checking out. So, all right, Brad. Well, thanks for running that down with me. Any other, I guess, like closing thoughts about the year in cinema or anything like that?
No, it was, you know, it was a very good year. There were a lot of things I liked, you know, from indies to blockbusters. And dramas, and the few comedies there were. And I do still wish that there were a lot more comedies being made by studios these days, you know, stuff that wasn't being sent to streaming. And yeah, that's something that I miss very much, because I was always very excited to like go back through and like see the comedies and like pit them up against, you know, hard hitting dramas that I love throughout the year, because comedy is every bit as hard and sometimes harder to pull off than drama, and it just does not get the respect that it deserves. But I'm glad I got something like Hundreds of Beavers, and I'm glad that there are still movies like Saturday Night and Anora that, even though they are at their core a dramatic, they are also still very funny, and they have some big laughs in them. So that's the one consolation that I get from movies. So
real quick before we go, how much pressure do you think is on the Naked Gun remake that's coming this year? Because that's one of the few big studio comedies that's actually coming out.
There's probably a lot, especially because the Naked Gun has such a legacy behind it. Like people still love the Naked Gun. It is one of the classic spoofs, along with, you know, Airplane and Young Frankenstein. So I think there's going to be a lot riding on it. But if there's one person I trust to pull it off, it's Akiva Schaffer. Unfortunately, because people's comedic sensibilities, at least for the general audience, it takes a while for them to catch on to the things that are really good. Even though Akiva Schaffer hasn't ever had like a big box office hit, and his movies and the movies of The Lonely Island have frequently bombed at the box office, from MacGruber to Popstar and back to Hot Rod, those movies have all gone on to become cult favorites and some of the most beloved and respected comedies of the 21st century. So if there's anybody who can pull off the Naked Gun reboot, it's Akiva Schaffer, and I'm very excited to see what he does with it.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk with you about that movie once we get a chance to see it later this year. So stay tuned for that. And that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about most of the movies that we mentioned at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.